You may have noticed some extra purple this Sunday. On the fifth Sunday of Lent, the church gives us the option to cover any statues or images in the church, including even the main crucifix, which is why then the processional crucifix stays by the altar, because the church also says whenever you celebrate the Eucharist, you have to have an image of Christ crucified there, because that's the sacrifice that we represent on the altar. So to help with that visual reminder of what's really happening there. But the idea with the covering of the images is as we draw closer to the celebration of the Passion and the Easter mysteries, you know, that's most fully celebrated here on the altar, the representation of Christ's suffering and death and rising to new life. And so we try to block out all the other things and focus just on the altar there where the sacrifice is represented. It's just a visual help to kind of fast of the eyes, so to speak, in order to focus in on the one thing necessary. That first reading from Jeremiah reminds us that the problem with humanity from Adam and Eve to you and me is a heart problem. We need a new heart. We need a heart that has the law of God written on it, where following the will of God is not only second nature, but a deep desire and a longing of the heart. Jeremiah says that will happen with the new covenant. And the new covenant is precisely what Jesus has established with us. The verse just before our opening verse today in the gospel is important in order to understand the story about some Greeks who want to see Jesus. The Pharisees had just complained to one another, "Look, the whole world has gone after him." The world, not just Jews, but the world. And in the very next verse, John tells us some Greeks, non-Jews from Greece or some other part of the empire, come to Philip, who together with Andrew are the only two apostles with Greek names. And they say, "Sir, we would like to see Jesus. We want to see Jesus." What a beautiful prayer. So Philip and Andrew tell Jesus. And Jesus hears that these Greeks, these representatives of the rest of the world, are coming to him. And he recognizes that as the sign that his hour has come. Part of the mission of Jesus is to unite all of God's children, to die not only for the Jewish nation, but for the whole world. And now that the world has begun to come to him, he sees that his hour has come. The hour for Jesus is his death. And he explains to us how we're to understand death, not just his death. Unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains just a grain of wheat. But if it dies, it produces much fruit. Death is not only a tragedy. If a person dies young or unexpectedly, or we just don't want them to die, yes, death is a tragedy. It was a tragedy that Jesus died on the cross. But death is more than a tragedy. Jesus says that unless we die, we don't bear fruit. Whatever fruit you have borne or hope to bear or to achieve in this life, that's great. It's all great. But all that we have accomplished or will accomplish can be lost tomorrow. Or maybe your accomplishments will endure for a long time. But, you know, a century from now, few, if any, will remember. What a sad tragedy. But death is more than a tragedy. It's only in dying, both to self and in body, that we bear fruit in eternal life. We don't stop accomplishing when we get to heaven, but there our accomplishments are enduring. St. Paul, elsewhere in the New Testament, uses the image, just like Jesus does here, of a seed planted in the ground, and how different it looks when it grows up. Think of an acorn compared to an oak tree. The body that we plant in the ground, our hearts, when we've died to self and sin, will become glorious in heaven. Not like the weak and tempted life that we live here, limited. Jesus even goes so far as to say that we should hate our life in this world. He doesn't mean that we should treat our life or this world badly. He means that we should always strive to love heaven more. And doing that puts a lot of things that we have to deal with in this world into a whole new perspective. I can put up with a lot if I remember that dying to self is the way to bear fruit in eternal life. I'm always struck in the gospel by how Jesus, on the one hand, is so confident, but then is also able to cry out for help, even with tears, to the Father. In today's gospel, he says, "I'm troubled now." And then that second reading from the letter to the Hebrews says it even more forcefully. He offered prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to the one who was able to save him from death. Jesus faced and even embraced death. But he was also a real human being throughout all of it. He didn't like it. He didn't want to experience it. But he chose to do so, which proves his love for us even more so, doesn't it? We tend to think that we're the only ones that suffer. Nobody else suffers like I suffer. Nobody else has tragedy like I have. But God has drunk our suffering and our tragedy to the dregs in order to share it with us and precisely to fill our worst experiences with his comforting and loving presence, that he's already there ahead of us. Lastly, Jesus prays in that gospel today, "Father, glorify your name." Just like in the Garden of Gethsemane later on, he prayed that the suffering might pass him by, but not my will, but yours, your will be done. So today Jesus prays, "I'm troubled by the suffering that is coming in my hour. And yet, Father, I want your glory, not mine. Glorify your name." It's another way of saying, "Thy will be done." And then we hear about a miracle. The voice of the Father thunders from the sky. The people are all around Jesus, right? Well, the Father's voice says, "I have glorified it and will glorify it again." Because the whole of Jesus' life has been doing the Father's will. To glorify God is to do his will over and over again. And the people all around Jesus, right away they start doubting or trying to explain away that voice. "Oh, it was thunder. It was thunder. It was the voice of an angel." And Jesus then gives a teaching on the meaning of miracles. Miracles are meant to help us in our struggles with faith. They help us to accept the Father's will and to see death as more than just a tragedy. Miracles are real, but they're not the point. Miracles help us to grow in faith. They shake us out of our complacency, out of business as usual in the world, because we're supposed to hate the world, at least all the sin in the world. The voice of the Father was a miracle And people immediately disbelieved it. The changing of bread and wine into the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ is a miracle. And people disbelieve it too. Are we lukewarm in that belief? The church says it's a serious sin to miss the miracle of the Eucharist on Sunday. We're given a miracle, and we're given the chance to receive that miracle of the Eucharist every Sunday. Do we need to die to some disbelief? Do we need to die to some lukewarmness? Unless a grain of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains just a grain of wheat. But if it dies, it produces much fruit. Death is more than tragedy. Sometimes it's the birth of real faith. So here's the homework for the week. Pray for zeal. And pray that you can die to lukewarmness in your faith. Thank you.